Chad again delays a dialogue on national peace. The military government, opposition groups, and rebels were supposed to start discussions on a new constitution and holding elections. So after a year of political turmoil, what will this mean for Chad? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. It has been a year of political upheaval in Chad. The sudden death of longtime President Idriss Deby last April left a power vacuum. His son, an army general, soon took over and formed a transitional military council. Mohamed Idriss Deby promised a quick return to democracy, but that hasn't happened. A national dialogue with opposition groups and rebel fighters has been postponed for a second time. The talks were supposed to start next week. About 300 representatives from the military government, opposition groups, and rebel forces have been holding preliminary discussions in Qatar. But they've made little progress on constitutional reforms and holding elections. Qatar says it hopes the delay will give all sides more time to reach a peace agreement. So how did Chad get here? Rebels launched a major incursion in the north of Chad during elections last year. A day after winning the poll, President Idriss Deby was killed while visiting the front lines. His son, four-star General Mahamat Idriss Deby, rapidly took over in a coup. He promised to hold elections in 18 months after a national dialogue. As a precondition to join those talks, rebels demanded a general amnesty and the release of prisoners. Deby complied. In March, the government, rebels, and opposition groups began talks in Doha a month later than scheduled. Chad's stability is crucial for its neighbors. The country lies across the Sahel and beside the Horn of Africa. Its soldiers are integral to the G5 Sahel Joint Force battling armed groups in the region. All right, let's bring in our guests. Joining us from Chad's capital, N'Djamena, is Ramaji Hoinathi. He's a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. Ovigwe Egwegu is a security analyst at the consultancy Afropolitica. He joins us from Abuja. And joining us from Barcelona is Enrica Pico. She's the director of the Central Africa Project at the International Crisis Group. A very warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Ramaji, let me start with you today. The dialogue on national peace has been delayed once again. What are the reasons for that?
I think that the main reason, and the official one we know from now, is a demand from the Qatar asking the Chadian government to postpone the holding of the dialogue on the 10th of May as planned. And this demand also normally came from a demand already made by the different rebel groups that are also sitting in Doha, Qatar, discussing actually with the transitional government. And this came as a result of the fact that the debates in Doha are not really moving forward. And people sitting actually in Doha are far from a peace agreement that could allow then a ceasefire and then coming to the national inclusive dialogue that is supposed to start here in the 10th of May. So here are the main reasons for that.
Enrica, after a year of such political turmoil, what does this delay mean for Chad?
Well, the main consequence of the delay is the impact on the overall transition. The 18 months transition was supposed to end this year, by the end of this year, with the celebration of election and the establishment of elected of new elected authorities. So this might raise concern about the length of the transition, about the duration of the transition, and the legitimacy of the Chadian authorities that have taken power after the death of former president, late President Deby.
Ovigwe, the discussions that have been going on thus far in Qatar, how have they been going?
Yeah, I think one of the things you have to understand with regards to the Doha talks is that the issues are very complex and they are very long-standing, because the problem they're dealing with in Chad with today is not just, it didn't just start after the death of former President Deby. Even while the former President Deby was in office, there were groups who were very dissatisfied with the government, rebel groups, opposition party members, because of how he has led or how he led the country at the time. So these are very long-standing issues, and it's a bit too optimistic to expect that within 18 months you could agree or you could even start a very solid conversation and end the conversation with maybe end of a declaration to say, okay, now we can move on to national dialogue. So I think one of the most important things we have to recognize is it will take a period of time, a good amount of time, to actually trash these issues one after the other, because they are, like I said, you know, it cuts across all of Chadian societies, whether it's within, you know, political reforms, or is even these questions about the state itself, and also, you know, territorial issues and ethnic issues. So it's quite a bit that they have on their plate. And I didn't really look at the timeline as very pragmatic, given the complexity of the issues.
Ovigwe, you know, you were just talking about how complicated all these issues are and how far they go back. Were you surprised that the delay happened, that these delays have happened, or were you expecting them?
Honestly, I was expecting them. And if you look at comments coming from one of the African diplomats who was actually observing the talks, he is actually not surprised as well. And that is because, yes, for instance, if you look, the government or the traditional government in Chad is very open to the process, commits to the process. And if you see when the Front for Change and Concord in Chad said they wanted, you know, the government to grant amnesty as a precondition for the talks, the government did back in November grant amnesty to 296, you know, combatants, you know, from the group. So there is a commitment from the government side. But if you look at the rebel side, the issues are, that is where things begin to get very complicated, because you have, you know, demand going, things like the Mama Debbie shouldn't stand for re-election or return of seized assets. And the government itself, you know, has power to make these concessions, but you have to also reconcile the competing rivalries even between the opposition and rebel movement, because while they might be forming a unified position, you have about 40 groups present in the process in Doha. Between the members making up this group, there are very strong divisions and there are very strong issues that divide them. And you have to reconcile all of this, because if you rush the process, what you have is a declaration or an agreement that is just valid on paper, and then these groups are not going to hold on to these agreements going forward when the national dialogue really, you know, gets underway.
Enrica, I saw you nodding along to some of what Ovigwe was saying. Did you want to jump in?
We are on the same line on the fact that there is a general consensus in Chad on the fact that the dialogue cannot be done without the presence in N'Djamena of the leaders of the main armed groups. So there is some tolerance in terms of delay, but the delay now they're starting to get more and more frequent. The national dialogue in N'Djamena was supposed to be held at the end of the last year, then in January, then has been postponed again. So this starts becoming an issue also in terms of what concerns the revision of the constitutional charter, the transitional constitution. This was one of the first engagement and condition also imposed by the African Union after the establishment of the military transitional authorities, the fact that those authorities cannot run for election at the end of the transition, and the revision of the constitution is one of the key points that should be discussed during the national dialogue in N'Djamena. So all those issues are still open and might become sensitive after almost one year after the death of Idriss Deby, President Deby.
Ramaji, you wrote a piece in March in which you said the partners supporting the country's transition, dialogue, and reconciliation processes should be firmer on the need to respect the timeframes and ensure inclusiveness so that no stakeholder is left on the sidelines. A stalemate on these issues could see Chad slide back into political instability. So how concerned are you at this time that instability could continue and grow?
I'm, as the other observers, really concerned by the fact that if we don't reach any peace agreement in Doha, it means that even though a national dialogue is holding, it's meaning that most of the biggest rebel groups are out of the deal. It means that they could still being able of rendering the country unstable. So it's something very important coming to a peace agreement in Doha. But what actually, you know, is kind of making the any hope of peace agreement fading in Doha is even the composition of the different groups that are actually sitting at the table. The rebel groups are so fragmented, as my colleague said, and so how could we come to a peace agreement if the division is not just between the government and the different groups that are speaking, but also within all the groups that are sitting to the table? So for me, we are facing two situations, actually. The first is that there is no more visibility on when the dialogue, national dialogue, will happen. There is even no visibility on which would be the issue, the real issue of Doha. And then after that, we are then questioning, you know, when should the transitional period end with the elections. And actually then the initial 18 months that have been planned are actually insufficient, finishing the discussions in Doha, then holding the national dialogue and going to elections. And there is something that people are not considering when discussing, you know, about the coming dialogue. We are too much stressing on the dialogue discussion with the rebel groups, but at the same time, there is something very important. There are a lot of dynamics in the country, actually, that also needed to be addressed. And those dynamics are linked to intercommunal conflict, to corruption, and to a lot of other problems. And so if all this is not solved, then there will be still questions about the inclusiveness of that dialogue. You know, having peace with rebel groups, it's something, but then having social peace within the country, to mean with political stakeholders, civil society, etc., is also something that is very important, but that actually is unforeseen by most of the actors discussing, you know, about the future of the country.
Ovigne, just how crucial is Chad's stability for its neighbors? And how concerned are Chad's neighbors at this time because of what's going on?
Well, Chad plays a very, very key role in terms of regional security, given the fact that if you look at the issue of, you know, Boko Haram, for instance, and an ISWAP, you know, the Chadian army has played a very, you know, strategic role in pushing back and even strangling Boko Haram in particular in the you know, heat of the you know, war in mid 2010s, and even up to very recently, the Chadian army was very, very pivotal in crushing Boko Haram. You would even say one of the most important things people used to look forward to was the presence of former President Deby actually going to the war front to actually face the combat group, the combatants from Boko Haram. So Chad not only serves that very important military role, but also it's a good logistics hub for international security partners for all of the countries. You know, Chad being also a key member of the multinational joint task force with Nigeria, Cameroon, and all of that. So it plays a very important role militarily for the issue of Boko Haram, and also even in addressing the the environmental issues even within the region. So there's a Lake Chad Basin Commission, and of course the headquarters is in N'Djamena, and they work together, you know, in coordinating with Nigeria, Cameroon, even Niger, to see how they can address, you know, food security issues in the Lake Chad, because of the shrinking of the Lake Chad has been going on for decades now. Mm-hmm. And there's recognition that if you don't address issue of food security, farming, farmer and cattle herder crisis, you know, we will not be able to solve some of the most important drivers of the conflict. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just terrorism, they are systemic, or they are even environmental factors to this. And Chad plays a very, very important role in all of the measures that in regional countries are taking. So if you, and even if you see President Debi's mm-hmm. outreach to regional countries, recently was in Nigeria. It was in Nigeria also last year visiting President Buhari, and the issue of cooperation, you know, the multinational joint task force, greater coordination. So it's it's a very important country for regional security, and that is why leaders and analysts across the region are watching very closely what is happening, because we believe if Chad can gain more stability and more political stability rather, and it will become even a better position to support regional security efforts.
Enrique, if Chad does continue to slide into instability, what does that mean for security and for the battle against insurgency in the Horn of Africa?
Well, the stability of Chad is a key issue for the entire region, not only, as my colleague said, for the fight against jihadism and Boko Haram, but also for the rest of the neighboring country. I'm thinking about Sudan, for instance. The violence in Darfur, in Jenina, are rising, the level of violence rising, and most of the violence are committed by Arabs militia. So the conflict might easily cross the border into Chad. Looking at the southern border, also the situation with the Central African Republic has been tense in the past year and might become tense again, especially after the incursion of Russian mercenaries into Chadian soil last year in May and then in September. So this is also something that the authorities in N'Djamena are monitoring closely, because might be factors destabilizing the situation in the country. And an unstable Chad might contribute to the destabilization of the region on the other way around, because most, for instance, of the Central African rebels are currently in Chad along the southern border. In the main same thing for Sudan. The eastern border is might be the safe haven for Sudanese militias, and as my colleague said, for Boko Haram. So the stability of Chad is key. Most of the western part is also well determined in maintaining this stability, but of course the fact that legitimate authorities, the election of legitimate authorities in a reasonable period of time is one of the key conditions. There are many transitions ongoing in the region, especially in West Africa and the Sahel. So the Chadian one is not the only one, but it can, for the moment, was one of the models, one of the references also for the transition. So we will have to see if this continues to be the case.
Ramaji, I know we touched on this earlier in the conversation, but the amnesty law that was designed to draw armed groups into the transition process, does that exclude some entities?
I think that globally, the amnesty law actually is not really excluding the biggest group that are concerned, because even the fact that have been included in the fight where the President Debi founded is not excluded from this amnesty. So globally, that's it. But and that's also the principle. But how this amnesty will be played down concretely on the ground, I think that this is also one of the unsaid reasons for which some of the main rebel groups' leaders are also not very keen, stopping the discussions in Doha and then heading to N'Djamena for the national dialogue. So I think, yeah, in principle, there is a kind of large amnesty, but the way this amnesty might be played down is also one of the fears for some of the main rebel groups, including mainly someone like Mahdi, the head of the FACT.
Ovigwe, the Front for Change and Concord in Chad is demanding amnesty for all of its fighters. Is that an issue that can be resolved?
That would be a very, very difficult issue, because, like I said earlier, the government, the traditional government, will give amnesty, you know, to some 296 people as a precondition for the talks. So that shows it is ready to do that. But we have to understand that this particular rebel group is responsible, or at least in part, for the death of former President Deby. Now, his son is in power. Whether or not he's the leader of the country, any son who knows the circumstances under his father's death and has power to do something would definitely want to exercise that power. So I think it would be very, very difficult for current President Deby to actually, grant a full, comprehensive or broad range amnesty for all of FARC, because it's a personal issue for him as much as it is about the national reconciliation and all of that. So maybe he might then use that as a concession to get extra concession on the issue of him not being allowed to run for the election. So it's all politics, but at the same time, it's still personal. But because I think him as a leader, having stepped into his father's shoes, his child is not in his best place, but he would argue, and even looking at the issue of attacks and how the country has been running, it seems business as usual, but that to some extent is it shows he has some capacity. So he would argue that he has capacity to continue to run the country. And then if the front for change and concord is really insistent on getting comprehensive and wide amnesty, then he might push them to actually support his position on being able to be reelected. Because, like I said, it's a very personal issue for him, and that might not be entirely possible.
Enrica, from talking to you and Ovigwe and Ramaji, this all sounds like an extremely complicated process. Some might say that perhaps it's irreconcilable. I want to ask you, are there some immediate steps that could be taken in order for the groundwork to be laid for reconciliation among all Chadians?
Well, the military transitional authorities have done something that, at least for what has been seen so far, was not that usual in Chad till last year, opening the political space to opposition leader, to civil society organization. What can be, what has still to be done is that this political openness is not be only on paper, not only transitional during these difficult months, but will actually change the political scene in Jemen, and that the current elite running the country will actually effectively open the political scene to other parties and other political forces. It will radically change the situation in the next future. And then, as mentioned before, I think it's important to keep the engagement that were settled at the beginning of the transition, mainly to revise the constitutional chart, the transitional constitution, and to include the ineligibility for the current transitional authorities for the upcoming election. Something that can also be done in terms of calming down the emerging ethnic and intercommunal tension in different parts of the countries, as my colleague Ramaji said, is also to include and to make this dialogue the most inclusive possible in terms of community from all around the country. So not giving the impression that the dialogue is again something within the elite of the country, and that in any case the situation will not the situation in terms of governing the country will not change, but including as much as possible different communities, mm-hmm. making them part of the process, and actually give space during the national dialogue for the discussion about land, mm-hmm. about different community tension, about governance, about corruption, and about all the other problems that have not been put in standby during this transition and during the dialogue in Doha.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Ramaji Hoinathi, Ovigwe Egwegu, and Enrica Pico. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.